As we get older, we're well aware of the benefits of movement, activity, dare I say, exercise. But for some of us, it's harder than it used to be. Today's guest comes with a bunch of credentials. She's a nurse practitioner. She has over 500 hours of yoga instruction and training under her belt, and over 100 hours of trauma-informed yoga training and instruction under that belt. Yoga. I seriously disliked my first few yoga sessions for good reason. Ellen O'Hara, however, addresses all my concerns and explains what age slash joint slash health sensitive yoga should look like. Listen in and stay tuned till the end as she has offerings for those of us game enough to give it a go again. Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. So, how's that exercise resolution going for you? In keeping with our theme of that was then, this is now, you do know we need to think about exercise somewhat differently as we age. And I know of which we speak, as I was a certified fitness instructor for a lot of years and certainly can't do today what I did 25 years ago, nor do I try. I'm not going to get into my own current regimen today, but my guest has some great thoughts for us to consider. Ellen is a yoga instructor. I'll get into her credentials shortly, but it was a comment on her website that convinced me she'd be a great interview. It says, although Ellen was a fitness professional, her first yoga class in a studio was truly memorable, not in a good way. She had no idea how to line up, stand or sit on her mat, or follow along with the teacher. She felt extremely clumsy and unfit. Bingo! My first few yoga classes were exactly that. I could do it all. I was uber fit, but I didn't speak the language and there were no interpreters. So I quit. Ellen O'Hara, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, Agnes. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, Ellen, now for your credentials, which sure. I must say assured me you'd be sensitive to our older bodies. You're ACE certified. You're an RYT 500 yoga instructor. I believe the 500 means 500 hours.
Yes, 500 hours of instruction. Yes.
100-hour yoga for athletes certified and 100-hour trauma-informed yoga for warriors certified.
Yes.
Okay, I got my mouth around it this time. That's impressive. Okay, let's start at the beginning. If you felt so clumsy, if you felt so clumsy and unfit at your first class, why persist?
Well, I will be honest with you. I started with my yoga journey. I had been a trainer for probably about 6 years or so, 5, 6 years. And I saw an opportunity. Yoga was popular. Yoga was a popular fitness class. Everyone wanted to do it. And I said, well, I'm going to need to have yoga as one of my offerings at my studio. So I'm going to try it. I'm sure I can teach it. So I went in from a perspective of, I need to do this for my business. I didn't really think I was going to like yoga. I necessarily didn't think I wanted to try yoga, but I was bound and determined to see what it was about. And after the first few classes, I really wasn't sure I was going to continue. You know, and it's interesting to hear that you were also a fitness professional. So that's great to know. But you know how we tend to be very go, go, go. If you're going to spend time exercising, it better be hard and it better be fast and I better get results from it. And it took me several classes of yoga to realize that it could be a workout, but it also had a lot more to offer. And maybe I did need to just kind of stop and be quiet for a minute and see what was going on other than just exercising. What's a, you know, I was kind of, what's a yoga lunge compared to a regular lunge, or what's their push-up like and versus my push-up? And that's really what got me started. And when I began my certification, I went through YogaFit, which has a relationship with ACE, which is the certifying body for my personal training, so that all your yoga certifications, you can get continuing education for your training certificate. So I thought, all right, I'll take a few and then I'll just go from there. I never intended to even get my 200 hour. And every time I went to a training and I learned more and more about yoga and I liked it more and I kind of let go of that, this is an exercise kind of thing, I started to really enjoy it a lot more. I got into it. I wanted to learn more. Every training that I said was going to be my last was never my last. I'm still going after all these years. And there's just so much to learn. And I really fell in love with it. And I guess that's kind of a long answer as to why did I go back. But that's why I went back. And I still go. And I, even though I teach, I still love to attend yoga classes. I mean, it's a great practice. We should do it all the time, right? All of us.
Yeah. Well, and I understand about, you know, getting the certifications. I was ACE certified, and then I went into seniors, third age. Then I went into weight training, like, and then personal training, like all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So although that was a lot of years ago now. Now, you also have a nursing background. Can you tell us about yoga through your nursing lens?
Yes, actually. So I haven't worked as a nurse in a while, but I am still a registered nurse, and I was a nurse practitioner. And I was a nurse practitioner for adults and geriatric populations. And once a nurse, always a nurse, if you've ever met one, right? We're always, never goes away. But I found the healing, the calming, the physical benefits of yoga go so well with the nursing background. It's a way to really kind of help people feel better, get better, do more, without being in that medicalized field. You know, it was a lot. And in order to be able to help people in a different way that's a little less, like I said, medicalized or sciencey, I think they're open to it sometimes a little bit more, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So what is trauma-based yoga?
Sure. So trauma-informed yoga is really interesting. It's becoming a lot more popular now. And the way that yoga is, where it intersects physical movement, breath, and meditation, for instance, I'm kind of putting yoga in a very little definition, but those are three main characteristics of yoga, if anyone's ever done it. And trauma-informed yoga, we learn about what is trauma and how people have experienced trauma over the course of their life, right? So something that happens to you may not bother you, but it may cause somebody else to feel a lot of trauma. You might get over it quickly. Maybe they don't. So identifying trauma has to be in a non-judgmental way, right? We can't say, well, this person's trauma came from a big deal, so it's a real trauma. And this person's trauma came from a little deal, so it's not that much of a trauma. Doesn't matter. Realizing that people can have traumatic things happen to them over the course of their life, and yoga is helpful in that manner. Now, for instance, these are little examples, but a difference in a trauma-informed yoga class versus, say, a quote-unquote regular yoga class, the instructor usually stays in one spot. We don't walk all around and adjust people and make suggestions because we don't want to startle anybody. We want them to feel like maybe they know where we are at all times. So that's one very small thing that we might do in a trauma-informed class. We give lots of options so that people have choices to make because we don't know where someone's coming from, you know, physically or mentally. And we'll give many, many options, movements that are more difficult, movements that are easier. There's always the option in a trauma-informed yoga class too, that somebody might just sit there and not do anything and just kind of take that 50 minutes or that hour for themselves and just have a minute to breathe. And a lot of times, that does happen in a class like that. And I've actually been teaching trauma-informed yoga in Boston through a group called Hands to Heart Center Yoga. I'm a volunteer teacher. All the teachers are volunteers. We bring yoga to underserved populations. So somebody who's not going to pay $30 to walk into a fancy hot yoga boutique, but could benefit from some meditation, some gentle movement, you know, a time and space. So we'll go to schools, we'll go to public libraries, immigrant centers, domestic violence shelters, mental health places, drug and alcohol rehab facilities, things like that. So I love my trauma-informed yoga. It's really, really fills my heart to do that.
So when it says for warriors, that warriors is not necessarily like soldiers, the military. It is just anybody who is fighting the good fight.
It is anybody, hopefully. I forgot about the warrior part. So it was initially, that course was initially started for soldiers with PTSD.
Okay.
And a lot of trauma-informed yoga programs did start that way. And the military uses it quite a bit, but we've learned that you certainly don't have to come back from a war to have experienced a trauma in your life, sadly.
Yeah. Yeah. We won't go into that, but yeah, just a lot of us have that, warlike living. Now, you practice vinyasa yoga.
Yes.
What is that? How does it? How many different types of yoga? Maybe that's a good place to start.
Oh, Agnes, there's a million different types of yoga. In the West, most yoga, I think that most people will encounter in a studio setting, a gym setting, a YMCA, something like that, would be vinyasa yoga, which is a flow style yoga where you do a pose that flows into the next one, that flows into the next one, and it's kind of a series. The whole class may not be that way. You may hold something for a while and then move to something else, but usually there's some kind of flowing motion in the class. And it's a really nice way to incorporate the breath and the movement in the yoga practice. And I would say, I don't know, maybe you've heard of some other types. There's Iyengar yoga, for instance. That one is very much focused on one pose at a time. We're going to do this one, get it right before we move on to the next one. Ashtanga is a very fast-paced hot style yoga, right? You've probably all heard of different kinds of hot style yogas. I don't teach hot yoga. It's just not my preference. I teach room temperature. I feel like we can make ourselves hot if we want to. But vinyasa is not necessarily a fast pace. It could be a fast pace, but it can also be a slow pace or a medium pace, depending on your audience.
Okay. And I think it was, I talked about the language, you know, because there's asana, there's chakra, there's prana, there's flow. And you've mentioned flow. The poses, that was what did me in the class. The instructor would say, okay, now we're going to move into, and she would have the, is it an Indian name for it? I didn't have a clue what that was. So now I'm further contorting myself to see what my neighbor might be doing,
right?
You know, and I was just hating it.
Oh,
how
sorry
do we,
about that.
No, you weren't the instructor. That's the good news. But how do we avoid that? Like, in terms of learning poses?
Well, personally, I use English for my, now asana is a pose. The word asana is Sanskrit for the yoga pose. And I use English. And also that's another, actually going back to trauma-informed yoga, we tend to use English and trauma-informed yoga because it's just easier. Nobody has to feel confused. You know, I assume that most people in the class are speaking English where I am. But as for being confused by the pose names, there are many ways you can learn the basic poses. You can take an online course. You can do a beginner class. I would suggest there are so many online opportunities to learn basic yoga, or look for somewhere near you that is offering maybe a beginner workshop. I've taught many of those also at studios, recreation departments, places like that. It's usually like one session isn't going to do it. I'll usually do like a 3 or 4 session workshop, and we'll go over all the basic stuff so that you have some comfort walking into that studio, because I do realize that that's an issue.
Well, as you were explaining that, and I was trying to recall, a lot of people, it was a gym that I belonged to, and a lot of people will pick the class that fits their schedule. And if that isn't a beginner class, then I guess a lot of people are going to feel what I felt.
Yes. And that still happens. I mean, I go to studios now and I work at studios now, and the schedule just sort of is what it is. And if an absolute beginner walks into a class where the instructor knows 80% of the people know the class, they can't really slow it down for the newcomer. So I always say, just try to find something locally, that maybe a workshop that offers a workshop. Do you have YMCA in Canada?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
YMCAs offer lots of intro yoga and beginner yoga, and gentle yoga is another one too. If you can find a class that has the word gentle yoga in the title, even if they happen to use Sanskrit terms, it's usually slower paced, so you don't feel like you're getting whiplash looking at everybody before you move into the next one. I totally understand.
You were in that. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, the million-dollar question, and I'm only going to ask it because of your credentials.
Okay.
Is yoga for every body?
That is a buzz term there, Agnes. That is floating around. Is yoga for everybody? And the answer is absolutely yes. I think the problem is that the thing that makes it difficult is trying to find that right class for you and your body and where you are, you know, at this moment. But yoga, there are eight limbs of yoga, and asana or the poses are only one of them. Okay, so there's, I won't go into them all. There's eight of them. They're technical, but there's breathing, there's meditation. You don't have to do an hour long yoga practice for it to count, quote, as yoga. You can sit and meditate for a few minutes. You can do a few shoulder rolls. You can do some cat cows and roll your back out a little bit. And you're doing yoga because you are focusing on nothing but the moment and what you are doing. So I hope that answers your question, because you do not need to be in great, awesome, crazy physical shape to practice yoga. Yoga can be a daily yoga practice, can be breath, meditation, a tiny bit of movement.
Okay, I feel really good about the fact that I caught onto a buzz statement without ever knowing
you
it
did.
Was a buzz.
You
a
did.
Buzz statement.
Look on Instagram. You'll see it. Is it for everybody?
Okay.
It is.
Okay. Now, I am, and our listeners are, boomers. I have bad knees. I have a friend with foot issues. Another friend is always complaining about back pain.
Sure.
Can we all do the same yoga, or do we really need to find appropriate classes?
I would say if you're a boomer and you anyone with joint issues, right? You don't have to be a boomer to have joint issues. Start with, again, that look for a gentle yoga class to begin with, gentle or beginner. I think you will be surprised and happy with how that works out, because it will be a slower paced class. And when it's a slower paced class, the instructor has time to give you different modifications for your joints. So for instance, your quote unquote bad knees, we will call that sensitive knees. We put a positive spin on your joints, Agnes.
And they're saying thank you.
We might say, you know, you don't have a bad back, you have a gentle back, a sensitive back or something. And there are so many modifications we can give you. And I will tell you, even as an instructor, one of my knees will act up a lot. And so I won't necessarily do the kneeling poses that day. Or, you know, I always give modifications for any kind of thing that might put some strain on the knee or any joint. And any, you know, most good yoga teachers will do that. So I will say too, make sure when you're looking for an instructor, a local instructor, for instance, make sure at the very least they have their 200-hour yoga certification. That's kind of like, I look at it as that's the bachelor's degree and the 500 is the master's degree. Because you'll know if they have at least a 200-hour, they've had a lot of instruction on joint safety and alignment and things like that. So
okay.
I would start there.
So maybe you've also answered my next question insofar as post-menopause often comes with weight gain as well.
Sure.
So once again, you're just finding the class that will be gentle for that weight gain.
Right. And also the other place that's good to look is we have in the US, a lot of towns have recreation departments that run classes that are usually geared more toward older people. And you can also look in senior centers and places like that, you know, depending on the age. But there's no reason that a weight gain or a joint you're concerned about should stop you from practicing yoga. I think there's movement we can do for anybody with any of those issues.
Okay, I'm just throwing questions at you.
Yeah, sure. Keep it coming.
Is yoga a standalone practice, or should we also be considering, you know, our stress levels, our nutrition, our pain levels, whatever?
You mean sort of for generalized wellness?
Yeah, I mean, I think we think of yoga generally, and you may not agree because you're in the depths of it, but we sort of think of it as, you know, that healing, perhaps, for lack of a better term, like for body healing and things like that. But of course, there's so many other things that go into our lives
that
affect us really a lot. And I mentioned
Sure.
nutrition, stress management, pain, all that sort of stuff.
Sure. Well, yoga, I mean, yoga isn't going to take care of all your issues, certainly. But, you know, there are many things that it will help that I think people don't realize. So, for instance, I'm going to look at my notes here for a second. So take, for instance, depression and anxiety. Okay, depression and anxiety can sometimes get worse post-menopause, right? I know anxiety is a really big issue too. And yoga is so good at helping anxiety. Once you practice yoga regularly, physical yoga, a little meditation, a little breathing, for instance, I'm saying, you know, gotta have kind of all these three parts of it going on. And by regularly, again, I don't mean an hour three times a week. I mean, maybe you go to a class and maybe you do 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there at home. It is so good for anxiety. It decreases that reactivity we have. So when something bad happens and we just go, oh my God, the sky is falling. It really helps tamp that down. I'll say from, you know, personal experience, that's been something I've noticed over the years. That's really, really been helped by yoga. So it does help you in more ways than just making you stronger physically or, you know, giving you muscles or making you more flexible. But there are all these things that come into play when you practice yoga more regularly.
Right.
I don't know if that answers you.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And we'll probably come back to this because I was just scanning my notes to find out where that follow-up
thought was.
Sure, yeah.
I have a bunch here.
Yeah. But just, I'm going to go now to tools. Yoga will often use tools. Mats are the most obvious. Blocks, pads, straps. Can you talk to those, please?
Sure. So if you're going to practice yoga, absolutely get your own yoga mat, because even if you go to a studio or something, they may have them, but I think you might want to have your own that you're touching, you know, yourself. And yoga mats should not be too thick. So I know as we get, you know, sensitive joints, we think, oh, I should get the thicker mat. But if it's too thick, it's too hard to stand on, too hard to balance on. So I would say no more than about 3/8 of an inch thick for a yoga mat. And then if you do have sensitive knees, bring a little padding for those knees. If you're going to be kneeling, a folded blanket or a piece of foam or something like that. But your mat should be really no thicker than about 3/8 of an inch. Most of them, that's about what they are. They come in all different types. Latex is great if you're not allergic because you can it's sticky and you won't slide all over. Yoga blocks, usually they're foam, and you want to have two of them when you practice because oftentimes you'll have one under each hand, for instance. And what they're not a necessity, but they're nice to have. If you're worried that you're not going to fold all the way forward, you know, you're not going to fold yourself in half. You might want a little space, make the floor come to you is what we say with the block, help the floor come to you rather than you make yourself go to the floor. This is where the everybody comes back in. And then the other thing, sometimes we'll use a strap, which is like a long belt. And again, that's to make you reach things that you might not be able to reach. So say I'm doing a fold again, and I want to try to touch my foot with my hands, but I can't quite reach. That's what we use the strap for. We put the strap around the foot and then we can do it. And I use the props in almost every class. Doesn't matter how physically able people are. We use them in pretty much every class. So they're very nice to have. And even if you're going to practice at home, I suggest having those props also.
Okay. And I think you've answered my next question too, that, you know, if we find a class we like at a local center, is it okay to bring our own tools, props, so we don't have to be up close and personal with things that other people have handled?
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, sometimes you go in with your own mat and then sort of check out and see, you know, usually they do provide everything, but I bring my own a lot of times too. It's always in my car. I've got two blocks, a blanket, a strap, my mat, always in the car. It's perfectly good etiquette to bring your own things if you would like.
Okay, etiquette, that's a good word. Thank
yes.
you. Okay, going just slightly sideways, I've heard of chair yoga.
Sure.
Is that a thing?
Chair yoga is definitely a thing. I have taught chair yoga in Boston a couple of times. So chair yoga can be done, it's always done in a chair with no arms, you know, a hard chair. So think about like a dining room chair or a folding chair. The class can be 100% done in the chair, or sometimes They'll have the people get up and hold on to the stand up, but hold on to the chair for balance, you know, if they need it. And it is surprisingly effective. There are a lot of poses that you can do in the chair. You'd be surprised. We can do the standing warrior poses, for instance. If you've ever done yoga, there's warrior one, warrior two. We can do those in the chair. We can do all kinds of arm, you know, here I am on the video showing you.
I usually do that.
We can do all of our arm things. We can do side bends. We can do forward folds. We can even come up with alternatives for downward facing dog and things like that in a chair. If we're doing it a chair class where the people do stand up, they have the chair to hold on to and we can still work on balance. And they don't feel like they're going to wobble or they have to move and go hold on to a wall or something. They've got their chair right there. It's a great practice. That's offered where I am in a lot of senior centers, but it's becoming more and more popular and they love it. Anytime I teach it, they love it.
Well, it's interesting as you were explaining that, because I do still lead a seniors exercise class. Mm-hmm. Most of these women are in their 80s and 90s. And as you were explaining that, I thought, well, we do that. We do that.
Sure.
So
it's
I'm not
much
calling
different.
It yogurt because I'm not a yoga instructor. But yeah, it's interesting. Now, I do want to go to balance. Speaking of
sure.
the older age group.
Yes.
I do a lot of balance work with my elders. Now, I know why I do that. Can you explain to our listeners, please, the advantages of doing balance work?
Oh, doing balance work? Oh, it's very important, of course. I'm sure many people, as they get older, start worrying about falling, right? Because we might have weaker bones than we used to have, or we might have a hard time getting up off the ground if we land on the ground. So learning balance is very important. And yoga, any yoga, has balance poses pretty much intrinsic to the practice. So you may have heard of tree pose, where you stand and put a foot on the leg and you bring your arms up overhead and you stand tall like a tree. We do that practically every class I teach. There are many ways to adapt these balance poses too. Like I said, if you're using a chair, or just keep one foot, just kind of go on the toe of it rather than pick it all the way up off the ground. But balance is so good. It's like I said, it helps us not fall. It engages our core muscles. It makes us stand taller. It's good for the back. I could go on and on here, Agnes, but it's really good for us as we get older. And you know, it gives us confidence too. I think it gives us confidence. If we feel like we can stand on one foot, might give us a little more confidence next time we go out or encounter some stairs, you know, that kind of thing. Also, if I can back up into that subject of balance, going back to falls, for instance, being able to get up and down off the floor. I'm sure you probably might see this or do this with your clients too, if you're teaching them fitness, but many people are afraid to go on the floor. And it takes a lot of time for them to realize, you know, or learn strength and ways to be able to get up and down off the ground. That again gives them a lot of confidence too. So I love that. And I love to teach people that. I love to teach them how to get up and down off the ground.
Yeah, I do that. Teach them how to get up and down, but also how to get out of bed. But
sure.
That's a whole nother subject.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's my nursing days. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Now, you've mentioned meditation, breathing. Sometimes there's chants.
Sure.
Is that, I'm going to say, necessarily a part of it? Because I know some people go, oh, meditation, you know, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. But
right.
Is it necessarily, or is it sometimes, can you get by with just doing? And I realize that probably, I'm probably answering my own question here. If you start out with the poses and you're feeling mm-hmm. comfortable and then you're feeling like this is part of your life, the next step, whether it's meditation, breathing probably comes up as part of the poses, but the meditation mm-hmm. maybe is just another step in that.
Sure. So like I was saying before, there are eight limbs of yoga, and one is the poses and the other ones are meditation, breathing, basically things like that. And I think that when you're talking about the West, people who say they're interested in quote unquote yoga are interested in the yoga exercises first. And I think that's what gets most people in the door, say. And once you, you know, kind of decide you want to keep going with yoga, a lot of people just naturally realize, oh, we're breathing with the poses. This instructor is making me breathe this way and that way. And I notice, oh, it's calming me down a little bit. And like you said, that's probably the first thing you'll do after you get used to the poses. meditation. Some regular yoga classes will offer a little meditation during their class, and some don't. But virtually every yoga class does a final relaxation at the end. They call it Shavasana. And it's a very quiet time, and the teacher should really be quiet and just let the student relax there. And that's sometimes people's first introduction to quote unquote meditation. It's really like 3 minutes of being quiet with yourself. That would have sent me running out of the studio the first time I think I went into class. And a lot of people are very uncomfortable with it. So I think that's how you get your sort of intro to meditation. It's just a few minutes of sitting quietly. You do not have to meditate. Nobody ever has to meditate. Some classes use it more than others. I hope I'm answering your question.
Well, yeah. And the reason I brought it up was just because, you know, a lot of people still, and especially our age, it's like, you know, the transcendental meditation, like all that 60s stuff.
Sure.
But nowadays, of course, you can't listen to anything without finding and hearing about the advantages of meditation, especially in our busy lives. So,
yes. And it also doesn't need to be, again, kind of thinking of it as yoga as being an hour long practice. Meditation does not have to be an hour long practice. It can be 3 minutes. It can be just closing your eyes and just listening to what's going on in the room, and then getting up 2 or 3 minutes later. I mean, it's not complicated. It's not rocket science, but even those little breaks of your day, or making it part of your yoga practice, they all add up, and you get the benefits from them the more you do it.
Right. Okay. You use the magic word benefits.
Okay.
I'm just going to fire some at you. You tell me if I'm out in left field or right on the
sure.
money. Strength, flexibility. We talked about balance.
Yes. Sure.
Self-awareness, stress reduction.
Yes.
One thing I always emphasize for my fellow boomers is being strong enough to pick up that hefty 4-year-old grandson.
Sure.
Because it, you know, you're bending over, you're picking up, you got,
right.
You know, you need balance, you need strength. And we don't want to not be able to pick up our grandchildren.
Right. So much strength. You need a lot of strength to pick up a child and they're usually not nice and quiet, and you know, they're probably flailing all over half the time too. And again, it goes back to that confidence to being able to do it, right? So when you are in a yoga practice that gives you strength and flexibility, and we twist a lot, don't forget, a lot of exercise is done in the forward plane, walking, you know, an elliptical machine, a bike, that kind of thing. Yoga, we move in every plane. So we twist to the left, we twist to the right, we have a long lever twist, we have a short lever twist. So those kind of things, once you get to doing them regularly, you realize, oh, I don't really have to be afraid of this. I can do this. And you build strength with your twisting, which is so important for something like dealing with a squirmy grandchild. So yeah, it's so good for that. And also, just like it has all the benefits of regular exercise too, it can decrease blood pressure and improve lung function. It increases endorphins, serotonin, decreases cholesterol. Like I said before, decreases that reactiveness we have sometimes in life to things. I know I love to hammer that point home, but I think it's really important because it makes you happier. You know, if you're living your life on eggshells and you're the kind of person who reacts to everything that life throws at them, you're not going to be very happy. So if things are coming at you and you can handle them, you know, you can handle them, and I'm just going to sit with this for a second and not just react, blah, blah, blah. Of course, I will respond, but I won't react. I find that is just one of the unsung benefits of yoga. I think it just really helps you be calmer and happier and enjoy your life a little bit more too.
Now, because I could also see you doing that, what I'm also thinking, because I also do this with my seniors, is that whole range of motion.
Yes.
You know, because we're so used to just walking straight ahead.
Yes.
That range of motion, you know, and then for older people, it's, you know, reaching something out of a kitchen cupboard. You know,
definitely.
Just those little things that.
Right. And we do it. If you're doing it in a yoga class, you're just doing it. And it's, chair yoga is really great for that too. And that's why I think a lot of the ladies like it, because they will always start laughing when we're doing chair yoga. They'll say, oh, I'm reaching my whatever up in the counter. And they, you know, they bring it into their daily life. But those things are really important if you want to live an independent life as long as possible. Right. We all do.
Yeah. Yeah. I often talk about twin sets. which you maybe are too young to know what a twin set is, but I said, well, remember when you pulled the sweater over your head and then you had the button at the back of the neck, you know, and I sort of start at the shoulders and I said, okay, walk your fingers to the back of the neck, you know, because so that's one of the range of motions that is one of the first to go, I think. But
sure. Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, dear. Okay. Now, the other thing you mentioned was reactive.
Yes.
And it also occurred to me with the balance thing is, you know, how it doesn't happen that often, perhaps, but we're startled.
Sure.
And so if we've got that extra balance and strength, that if we sort of jump sideways, it does not result in falling over.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, yeah, the more practice you have too with moving in balance, yeah, the less likely you are to react to something, even physically too, right? In that exaggerated manner. Anything that will give us strength and balance will help us with things like that, for sure. Absolutely. That's a good point.
Now, I'm just trying to think of things before I ask you about your classes, but I remember my doctor a kajillion years ago explaining to me that it's the little things in life that put our backs out. So like literally bending over to brush your teeth, you know, because if you're going to lift a heavy box, you probably prep yourself and you get your balance a bit wider and things like that.
Right.
But it sounds like the whole body awareness that comes with yoga maybe helps us to stop and think about the fact, oh yeah, I'm just going to reach out for that thing in the back seat of the car. But okay, how am I going to do that?
You know, body awareness, you may have seen this too, being a trainer too. So say you have somebody who has never exercised in their whole life and you're training them versus somebody who has exercised in their life. For me, I can see it immediately that they don't have the body awareness. They don't quite know how to say squat safely. They don't put the weight in the back of their heels. They'll take their knees forward, for instance, in a squat or something like that. And I find that also people who don't have a lot of body awareness have a lot more fear of those things that you just mentioned, of coughing and hurting themselves, or of putting on their pants and pulling off, pulling out their back or something like that, for instance. And body awareness in yoga too, what will happen is over time, we do things like body scanning, for instance, maybe while we're sitting at the beginning of class or at the end of class, where we pay attention to your shoulders, pay attention to your arms, pay attention to your back, and we'll kind of scan the whole body. But it gives you this sort of almost, what's the word I'm looking for? Interior awareness of your body that I think is very helpful in that manner. And I love how you said, it's the little things that get you. That's a good doctor you have there, I think, because yes, they do. And you might notice. Also, I think it might help us notice injuries occurring before they get too bad too, because you'll be a little more attuned to, oh, my shoulder, huh, I wonder what that is. I didn't notice that yesterday. Whereas maybe before you have good body awareness, it's a week and then the shoulder is really in pain before you notice it or do anything about it. So there's that aspect of body awareness also.
Well, what I find too with, like you talked about a body scan, is that's often how I will end my day with like a pre-bed meditation or a bedtime meditation. But if you do the body scan, it's like, oh, wait a minute, I'm still carrying something in my shoulders, you know, why are my feet like that? That sort of thing. So it just means you can sort of just let, as you go down bit by bit, digit by digit, or whatever they're called, you can just tune in, just, you know, figure out what's going on.
And you can be aware that, like you said, for instance, I'm holding something in my shoulders. So I don't necessarily believe that you hold an emotion in a muscle, for instance, but the body will adapt itself in a certain way to stress. So you might hunch your shoulders to stress, for instance, or you might feel tightness in your hips because you walk a certain way when you're stressed out, or you bend your back a certain way, right? So we hold stress in our body, I believe, in that manner. And having the body awareness helps you realize, oh yeah, okay, well, I had a really rough day, so I better be careful with my back tonight. Maybe I'll do a few cat cows before I go to bed or something like that. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you're used to winter as well where you live.
Yes,
But I know
definitely.
that with my elderly ladies, you know, like I say, do a little bit of marching around or something, like it's really mild. But then I have them stop and I go like, okay, check in with your shoulders. Because when you're cold, what do? You pull it
Oh,
all in and
yeah.
your shoulders go up to your ears, and it's you have to really think about releasing all that. This is great talking to you. I keep on doing it in my chair.
I can't talk about yoga and not move my body. It's the same thing. And it's very cold here right now. It's February and it's been very cold. And I've been so happy though that people are turning out for class because, you know, it's cold and it's nighttime and you might want to stay home under that blanket, but they're coming out now and it's great. And so we're doing all that stuff. We're trying to undo the forward hunching and the shoulders. And yeah, it's just like that here too.
Well, and in this technological age, we're talking on a computer. Let's not talk about too long about the shoulders hunched forward. You know, we got the
Okay.
mouse, we got the keyboard. You know, it's like,
Right.
yeah, you really have to stop and remember to just open it up again. So,
Yeah.
okay, I'm feeling a little more comfortable now about going to a studio. I'm speaking on behalf of our listeners. But
Okay.
if that listener is still feeling a little intimidated, I understand you have classes slash courses.
I do. I have an online course called 9 Steps to Launching Your Lifelong Yoga Practice. And you can purchase the course. It is a combination of videos and PDFs. And it goes from everything from what is yoga, a little bit of the definition of yoga, to all the basic poses that you're going to see in a regular vinyasa style yoga class. So you will not feel intimidated, hopefully. When you walk into your local studio for the first time, you will have heard the poses, you will have seen them, you will have learned how to do them for your body because I do talk about modifications for things like gentle joints and things like that so that you can make your practice your own and you won't have to get whiplash looking around at everybody else and see what they're doing.
So where were you 15 years ago and I needed you? Okay, I have my other monitor over here and I do have all of your
Sure.
stuff up. One thing that we already talked about is yoga studio etiquette. You have a file. It's a file. Is it a video or a written
Oh,
file?
it's a free video on my site. Just because, like we alluded to earlier, walking into the studio for the first time can be a little intimidating, especially if it's not a gym or somewhere like that. It's a quote unquote studio. So there might be props all over the wall. There, it might be very quiet in there. You know, where do I put my mat? How do I set up and things like that? So it's just a little blurb, and anybody can watch that.
Okay, now just you mentioned a studio, maybe it's quiet, it's in the mood. Just a side question here, is incense ever used?
Sometimes some
Because
places
like
will
I'm just thinking of
use.
myself, I'm super scent sensitive. So if I walked in and there was incense, I would have to walk back out again.
Yeah, that's too bad. I think in this day and age, people are more sensitive to that. And a lot of yogis also like to use essential oils, but we are taught in our yoga teacher trainings to really be careful with that and make sure everyone's okay with it before we use it. So, I mean, I can't promise you that they won't have incense. Some of them do, but personally, I would not use a scent unless I knew everyone was on board with it. And it can be nice, but I totally understand that people are sensitive to them.
So that might be a question that a listener
Yeah, you'd
might
have to,
phone
or
ahead and just
maybe,
ask.
yeah, if that's really, really important, you might want to call them then. Yeah, before you go, honestly.
Now we've talked about our knees. You have yoga tips for knee issues and yoga tips for wrist issues.
I do. Those are all free downloads. They're little PDFs with videos. So, for instance, if you have knee issues, I give you examples of how to maybe pad your knees in certain poses, how to stand in lungy type poses, for instance, and make it a little bit easier on your knees. And there's four or five, six different little tips in there for how to manage your those joints. And I also, yeah, wrist, back, and knee. And those
Okay.
are all free for anybody on the
So
site.
wrist would be things like carpal tunnel or.
Yes, so carpal tunnel. So if you imagine a lot of yoga poses, we use our hands like feet. So a downward facing dog, for instance, I'm not talking about handstands or anything like that. I mean, those are kind of specialized,
This next year.
but there's a lot of pressure on your hands in some of the poses. And yes, carpal tunnel, tendonitis, just generally inflexible wrists because you don't use your hands in that way necessarily, unless you maybe exercise and do a lot of push-ups or something like that. So there are warm-ups, there are things you can do to sort of prop the bottom of your hand, things like that if your wrists are sensitive and you're worried that it will impact you being able to practice.
Right. Now, your yoga tips for back issues, what does that entail? I'm just thinking, people with back issues, they're paranoid.
Sure. I'm sure they are, and I understand why they are, because a bad back or a sore back is going to ruin your day, your week, your month. I totally understand. So it's things like how to set yourself up when you're lying down. Maybe put a prop underneath your knees so that you're not lying flat, or how to come into different poses from other ones in a safe manner, things like that. So it's just, again, maybe four or five, six little tips of how to make it a little more accessible for you, any yoga class.
So I love these conversations because one thing leads to another. But I'm just
That's
thinking
okay. That's great.
within a yoga class, if somebody l looks at what people are doing or understands the pose and goes, right now I'm not able yet because maybe they're new to yoga and they just know that something will give if they do a particular
Sure,
pose.
sure.
Is it poor etiquette to either sit quietly during that pose and not do it, or should you wait until you can do it?
Oh no. I think I, as a teacher, and I would say most of the people I know that teach would want you to have a comfortable practice. We would never, as an instructor, want to make somebody feel like they have to do something that they're not ready for. And in my classes, I give so many options. So for instance, we were talking about, say, a downward facing dog where your hands are on the mat, the butt's up in the air, and then your feet are on the mat. Okay. Now, if you're not used to that, if you don't like to be upside down, you have high blood pressure, there's a lot of reasons why you can't be upside down. I always give other options for that because I know that's not going to work for everybody. So hopefully you've found a good teacher, or maybe someone you know can recommend a good local teacher who can give you options for that. For instance, you could do a kneeling tabletop, you could take a child's pose instead. And usually in my class, if I have new people who I don't know, I always tell them, please feel free to take a child's pose at any point and just join us up when you're ready. So that really should be the standard for most yoga instructors at this point, and people I know teach in that manner, but I can't promise you that everyone will be that way. But I would so much rather you come and do what is comfortable for you than to do the flow, because who cares really if you can do the flow or not? You're here to practice. You're going to do plenty of other things. You don't need to do every single thing.
Do the same rules apply as, I used to teach fairly heavy duty aerobic dance, and I would always emphasize that if you have a health issue that I should know about, you have to tell me so that I can give you the proper adaptation or make sure that you don't go off the deep end, whatever. But
Right.
is that a good idea in a yoga class as well?
It is. Now, the teacher may or may not, like if you're new to a yoga class, they may or may not speak to you, say, before class starts, if there's not time. I mean, I would love to know ahead of time if possible, but that doesn't always happen. People kind of run in at the last minute sometimes, So a good yoga teacher, in my opinion, should kind of have a blanket statement that says, please feel free to adapt any of these poses, to skip these poses. Call me over if you have a question. I'm very happy in the middle of a class for someone to call me over. We could be halfway through and someone will, every now and again say, oh, by the way, I just had this surgery, 3 months ago. And I'm like, oh my God. But anyway, still nice to know, even if it's mid-class. But I think as far as etiquette is, yes, if you can let the instructor know about a serious issue, for instance, or even, say my knee is acting up and I'm not going to do a kneeling pose. I might just tell her today, I'm not going to do the kneeling pose today, just FYI. It is perfectly within etiquette to tell the teacher as much or as little about your health conditions as you would like.
Yeah, just to be safe. Now, speaking of safety, how about manipulation? Do instructors ever try to get you into a pose?
That is an awesome question. So we call that adjustments in yoga. And this kind of goes a little bit into the trauma-informed yoga. So in trauma-informed yoga, we never do adjustments because we don't ever want to startle anybody. We don't ever want to sneak up on anyone. Nowadays, it has become very common that the teacher will ask either in a few different ways. At the beginning of class, maybe while people have their eyes closed, for instance, the teacher may ask, I may be doing some adjustments. If you would like me to leave you alone, please raise your hand. That's very common. So you don't have to do it in front of everybody. You don't have to make a big deal about it. And the other thing that's very common now is that the instructor will have something like a basket with some clothespin type clips in it. And as you come in, you take a clip and you put it on your mat if you would like to have an adjustment or if you're open to any adjustments. So I always like to know ahead of class, either one way or the other, if they're open to adjustments. Also, I don't think in this day and age, there should be anybody sneaking up on anybody and you know, really moving anybody into a pose in any big way. I think adjustments should really be take into account the fact that everyone has a different body. I may not know that your hip is bothering you today or your shoulder is bothering you today. And I should not care as a yoga instructor that their triangle pose looks like the guy in the manual. And it's not going to, and it's none of my business, but I want to make sure they're safe in it. And as long as they look like they're nice and sturdy and nobody's going to fall down and nobody's going to overextend, that instructor should offer a small adjustment. Perhaps the person isn't doing it, you know, maybe their arm is way in the wrong place and you just want to help them learn the pose. But there's no reason that the instructor should be moving people's bodies around in a strong manner. It's usually a fingertip touch or even a verbal adjustment, which I like very well too. I might come around and say, oh, just move your foot a little more forward or move your toes to the right. I really prefer those nowadays too. I mean, I think in this day and age, there is no reason for people to come up and forcefully move anybody.
just even handling, like a lot of people just do not want their body handled. Thank you kindly.
They don't. And that's why, you know, I broke my ankle about 8 years ago. And when I first went back to the studio, the very first thing I said to the instructor was, please don't do any adjustments because I just don't know how my ankles, you know, what I'm going to be doing today. So I learned from that, honestly. I think verbal adjustments are really the way to go. I mean, especially after COVID, we weren't touching anybody for a long time.
Hey, you on the far side of the room, I can't come any closer, but.
Right, exactly. Oh, dear. Move that foot a quarter inch to the left.
Yeah, right. No, my left, not your left. I guess the bottom line is, as in so many other things, is you find a facility, you find a class, you find an instructor, the group, everybody that you are just comfortable with, that you feel mm-hmm. safe with. Mm-hmm. And if your spidey senses say, then you go find another class or another instructor or something.
That's really the bottom line. And ask people you know locally, ask your friends, take advantage of the local Facebook groups, those kind of things, because people will know, maybe it's not in your exact town, but maybe it's one town over, that, you know, this instructor is good with joint issues. This instructor is too fast, too slow, whatever. But hopefully they're positive recommendations. But, you know, I find word of mouth to be really, really important. And it's how I've gotten and held on to a lot of clients too, because everybody's looking for a different style of yoga and yoga teacher. But if you can ask for a good recommendation, I think that's really the way to go.
Right. And we've just talked about COVID. A lot of things were happening online. You have an online sure. course. If somebody's mm-hmm. going to go to YouTube and look up yoga, mm-hmm. then they need to do their due diligence around the person who is making the video.
Oh, absolutely. Because yes, it's kind of like you could get the, you know, equivalent of a bodybuilder as a yoga teacher, you know. And yeah, I think you look for those qualifications. At least do they have their 200-hour certification, preferably their 500-hour certification. If they have the five, they're going to be, I think, just a little more adaptable to different bodies and to different styles and types, and making the yoga work for the person. So we would say make the pose fit the person, not the person fit the pose. So yes, absolutely. Look for their qualifications. Look for who's following them. For instance, if you're on YouTube, you know, look for who's following them. Read the comments and the instructions. Make sure they're not all, you know, 20-year-old bikini models taking those classes, and you might be okay.
Okay, that might be a good place to morph. Now, where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Yeah, so I am at harmonystrongyoga.com. And there are links to my classes and information about me there, and as well as my links to my social media should all be there.
I was just going to ask about social. I know you're on Instagram because that's where we
connected. Instagram, Harmony Strong Yoga. And yeah, I think that's how I found Agnes too.
May I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
You're also a vegan. Was that related to yoga for you or a life choice?
You know, I don't think it was related to yoga necessarily. I had always wanted to be vegetarian, always wanted to be, had young boys that were picky eaters and just couldn't deal with, just couldn't cope, you know. And then once they got a little older and became a little easier, I went plant-based. So I wouldn't say it was yoga related. It was more, gosh, a lot going in there, Agnes, but I didn't love the idea of eating animals. I'm lactose intolerant, so the dairy didn't work for me anyway. And, you know, it was just easy. I started out vegetarian, and, you know, I even left fish in there for a little while. I gradually got rid of that. And then I realized I didn't need the other stuff either. So I've been very happy eating plant-based for a while, probably about 6 years now.
Yeah, I've got a very dear friend who's vegan, and yeah, I'm basically vegetarian. But
It's much easier now. Much easier now.
A total aside, totally left field, is I just put something on my Facebook, is I get my local grocery store ads in my email. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Wednesday night, I opened up the ad. The price of groceries nowadays, looking through. Yeah. And what caught my eye was an ad for like a beef tenderloin.
Uh-huh.
That thing was $90 a kilogram. And I went like,
what?
Well, if I wasn't vegetarian before, I sure as heck am now.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, like, oh no, it's so, it can be very, people say, oh, but the fruits and vegetables are expensive. Yeah, but a can of beans costs $1, you know? No, it's great. And once you try it for a while and experiment with, you know, different styles of cooking, it really becomes pretty easy after a while. And I really enjoy it and I love it, except if I go to some high-end restaurant and I don't know, you know, have to call ahead, but but I love it. I love plant-based eating. I know, have you ever done a show on that?
Yes, I have. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a woman in Ontario that went vegan because of her health issues. And her doctor, she was in seeing her doctor one time and he said, you do understand you're going to be on these meds for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And she went, pardon?
Yeah.
And so she just revamped her whole lifestyle. Her husband said, whatever you're doing, I'll be with you. And so, I mean, it's kind of I tease her about it because they're both bikers. So here's this Harley couple pulling into wherever and they're vegan, you know, it just doesn't suit the, you know, the mental image. That,
well, everybody, why can't every place have a veggie burger on their menu? I mean, why not? Why does that make why can't we do that? We can have a veggie burger and French fries. Like, we'll be happy with that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, okay, now that we're down this rabbit hole, is my friend who is vegan, and I'm not going to name names because I can't remember for sure, is one of the veggie burgers is not vegan because there's some ingredient in it that they test on animals.
Oh.
So it's like, okay, things that you'd never think about. You read the ingredients, you think, no problem, because most of us don't know in depth. but
Well,
that's
I think that's where you come into the whole vegan as a philosophy too, versus maybe a plant-based diet. So, you know, I would consider myself probably plant-based because vegans would never own leather. You know, a lot of them don't use any animal products at all. Like they won't use wool. They won't, you know, they don't want anything that ever came from an animal. And I don't really buy leather anymore, but I own stuff that is leather and I'm not going to suddenly throw it out. You know what I mean? So if I read the ingredients on something and there's no milk, there's no eggs, there's no meat, I'm not going to research what's the dye is from a beetle. Like I know that is the case. And some vegans actually won't even eat things that are like manufactured in a cruel way. So for, you know, some sugar might use child labor. They literally won't eat sugar and you know, things like that. And I'm, you know, that's great. That's just too complicated for my life. But
well,
that's,
they don't
I
eat
think,
sugar
why.
Because they use bone meal for whitening the sugar.
Yes,
you know,
yes,
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
so they won't, and some wines and things like might have, they use like a bladder or something to strain them. I know that. But so I you know, I guess I'll say I'm vegan when I'm at a restaurant, so I know what I'm getting, but I'm really probably more of a plant-based eater. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I was just
okay.
Going down the rabbit hole, as I say.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's true. And I'm a knitter and I love wool. And I realize that, you know, sometimes down the line, those poor little sheep are going to be a pork chop or something, but not until they've lived a really good life. You know,
you're plant-based. You don't get pork from a sheep.
Oh, did I say pork? Sorry. You know what I mean.
I
Lamb
know.
Chop. Been a while.
dear. Okay. I love ending on a good laugh.
Yeah. Oh, this was fun. And I do enjoy your podcast. I recently listened to the one about the eating disorders.
Oh, in midlife. That was, yeah, a bit of a
yeah.
shock.
That was really interesting. And then the other one was the lady that was the book publisher. Yeah. So yeah, it's really nice. So thank you so much for having me. And
well,
I'm
no,
happy
thank
to be
you for reaching
in
out
good
on
company.
Instagram. Yeah, no, that's great. Okay. So your website link is in the show notes. All of your links will be on your page at our website.
Okay.
Listeners, if you have thoughts on today's show, please talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at the Boomer Woman's podcast at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Leave stars and reviews where you can. They help us move up the charts. And share this episode. We all know people who could benefit from more movement. And as we said at the start, yoga can be intimidating, but it's also, as we have learned, so adaptable for everybody. I've used that twice now without realizing that it was a thing. Ellen O'Hara, thank you so much for being my guest today and assuring us that we can do yoga, especially after taking your foundational course.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Have a great rest of week.
All right. Bye-bye.